Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, there are days we have really good news. There are days we have pretty good news. There are days we are stretching for good news. And there are days we're pretty much grasping for straws. And today is definitely one of those days. But we think there
is... It's a rebuilding day for the Good News Martini.
It is.
They're hoping to have a high draft choice tomorrow, and things will look better.
Right. Well,
Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah, everybody.
Yeah, we probably should just make it two martinis, but we aim to please. We want to fulfill our promises for three. So here we go. Good Martini, in quotes, is a USA Today Gallup poll finding a nation more downbeat, more dissatisfied with its political leadership, and more concerned about the country's direction than at any other point in modern times. Oh, we're not done yet. By wide margins, according to the USA Today story, those surveyed say the election process isn't working, the candidates aren't coming up with good ideas to solve the nation's problems. Fewer than half say there is any candidate running in either party who would make a good president. This expert in the story says Americans see a political process that is out of touch and paralyzed in the face of crushing economic conditions and fear about the future. It's as if the country is on the Titanic and going down, and you've got Congress in the presidential field playing violins. All right, that's
here's someone's probably asking, why on earth is this a good one? And so let me try to put my spin on this, since that's what we've been driven to. Look, if you had to say, what do you have anxiety about heading into the 2012 election? It will be that at some point, what we've seen, and particularly in the realm of economics over the past 3 years, that Americans begin to accept as the new normal, that they begin to think that, you know, around 9% unemployment is perfectly fine, that they actually believe that the shrinking workforce, that because the workforce is smaller, they believe the low, you know, the 8.6% is the real unemployment rate. Whereas if we had the same size workforce as we did when Bush was president, it'd be closer to about 11%. And kind of this, just, you know, what President George W. Bush might call the soft bigotry of low expectations. We mentioned yesterday that, not too long ago, that Obama thinks that his first 2 years can be put up against anybody except for Lincoln, FDR, and LBJ. It's kind of interesting that LBJ makes his pantheon of greatest presidents. The president who gave himself a B-plus after his first year really does believe that he has done a super-duper terrific job. And that's not that surprising if you think about, you know, the long history of Obama's high opinion of himself. But my fear would be that Americans would just come to accept it. But he really is doing the very best that anybody could be hoped to do in this circumstance. And you can't blame him for things not being any better. And you know, to kind of adopt the Jack Nicholson mantra that this really is as good as it gets. That they would say, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? That through smoke and mirrors and the constant lowering of expectations, yeah. And so I think the good news of this poll is that Americans aren't buying it. They aren't satisfied with what they're getting. Certainly it hasn't been great news for the Republicans, but I think this is an environment that is more toxic and more dangerous for incumbents. And so, you know, considering the number of Democrat incumbents will be on the ballot in the White House, at the White House and the Senate, and even, you know, in a couple of vulnerable House seats, this could be good news for the right. But let's not pat ourselves on the back too much.
Yeah, the story also says that excellent ratings were given to President Obama by 8%, 3% to congressional Democrats, 2% to congressional Republicans. All three were rated highest in the poor category by a plurality in all three. So I think the good news for me, Jim, here is that this is the timing of this survey, and not only the fact that Americans remain dissatisfied, but when you look at where things stand right now, they've had 3 years of President Obama, so they're less likely, I think, to believe that he's the one that's going to suddenly reverse course in these areas, especially after he had 2 years to do exactly what he wanted with an overwhelmingly Democratic Congress. I think it's a good message to Republicans who perhaps in the House have been patting themselves on the back for standing in the gap. People want to see more from them on that, actually getting things done. It's also a good warning to whoever the Republican nominee is for president that so far, not so impressive. So got some time to listen a little more, get some more exciting ideas out there on how to, you know, reform entitlements, something we've never really heard much about in any of these debates, and some of these other key issues that may get some attention, may not get some attention during this campaign, but certainly ought to be focal points. So people are upset, mostly with the economy, and as you mentioned, with a Democratic incumbent president and a Democratic Senate with many more Democrats on the ballot this year than Republicans, then that should be good for Republicans going forward. But they actually have to learn something from this, and we'll see if they do. Whew. I think we did okay with that.
By the way, we will have a celebratory a hot toddy after two to forget martinis 1, 2, and 3 at the end of today. It's a special extra boozy edition of Three Martini Lunch.
There you go. On to martini number two now, and here's the bad one. And you know, we heard President Obama with his very brief "We can't afford to wait" tour after, you know, his jobs bill basically went down in flames in the Republican House and the Democratic Senate. So he basically decided to try and sign some executive orders, nibble around the edges on issues like student loans and refinancing mortgages. And now Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat of Texas, wants the president to just unilaterally extend the payroll tax rates by the 2 months that the Senate bill ordered it to do. The House Republicans, of course, are balking at that. They want a year. She's tired of the bickering. She clearly doesn't want to be back in Washington during Christmas. So just have the president extend this, Jim, this whole separation of powers thing. It really just gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah, we shouldn't be that surprised. We could have even said, you know, Sheila Jackson Lee looks silly as our good martini if we wanted to.
Right.
On the other hand, it's kind of, you know, sun rises in east, sets in west, and, you know, the sky is blue. Nonetheless, it just kind of further illustrates, you know, the total about face Democrats will do once their guy is in office. I mean, we talk about the you heard all the talk about the imperial presidency and a runaway president who you know ignores the will of Congress and the signing statements and all that stuff. And then Obama comes into office, and not only do you have them at one point, you know, having no problem with unilateral war making and ignoring the War Powers Act in Libya. You know, the assertion that somehow he should just enact his jobs bill and ignore Congress. I don't know how that, you know, exactly put to work. But now they want him to set tax policy all by himself. So this is what Democrats are. The dominant philosophy of a lot of people in politics, some on our side, but I find a lot on the other side, is I don't care how I get what I want. I just want to get what I want. And so if you can pass what you want through legislation, terrific. If you can pass what you want through the executive, through executive orders, fine. If you can do it through judicial activism, fine. They really don't care. Whatever avenue is open to them, they will adopt it and use it. And I think that's remarkably unprincipled. And it shows kind of this, I'm getting into Jonah territory here, if not liberal fascism, then a certain sense of a callous disregard for the processes of a constitutional republic. And in the end, they don't really care what the rules say. They just want what they want and just make it happen. And, you know, the rules are for losers and for folks who just worry, get hung up on details, et cetera.
I think we should schedule a Lincoln-Douglas-style debate between Gingrich and his explanation for why we should abolish courts if necessary, and Sheila Jackson Lee with why the legislature really isn't all that important after all. So that would be exciting. I think the founders would be really excited to know
if
that
we
was
could just find somebody who doesn't want to have a presidency. Fantastic debate coming with a conclusion. We just eliminate our entire system of government.
There you go. The anarchists would love that. On to martini number three now. And, you know, Jim, right around the fringes of this Republican presidential campaign, of course, have been those who were running for president officially but couldn't get into the debates. Buddy Romer still running. Thad McCotter was running for a while. Gary Johnson got into one debate on Fox News, couldn't get into any others after that. Constantly made the cable rounds to point out that he couldn't get on the ballot because he wasn't even being listed in polls. But anyway, he's tired of the Republican Party. The two-term New Mexico governor now is going to seek the Libertarian Party nomination, which most folks thought he was probably better suited for anyway. And so now the question is whether Gary Johnson is going to do any damage to either nominee if, in fact, he becomes the Libertarian nominee. Some folks think he might mess up the final vote in New Mexico, potentially for a good way for Republicans. But in the end, if you can't get listed on a primary poll sheet for the Republicans, you're probably not going to have a huge impact.
So this is the guy who forgot to file in New Hampshire. So there's a part of me that wants to say, if you're upset that you're not getting enough attention, you know, and you don't take care of basics like this, shut up. There's a certain – we've been hearing a lot of talk about the Ron Paul folks, and he won't, you know, completely close the door on a third-party bid. You know who I end up coming up with an enormous amount of respect for, even though I already liked him, Greg?
Who's that?
Tim Pawlenty. You know why? Because he wasn't doing as well as he hoped, and he quit, and he stayed quit. That's not really a word. And he remains out of the race. He didn't say, oh, I'm going to take my ball and my bat, and I'm going to go home. He didn't pout. He didn't bang his spoon on the high chair like the angry toddler that Gary Johnson is being and that Ron Paul threatens it. Look, there's an old-fashioned notion called you have these primaries because it's supposed to pick the best candidate. And if you poll well, maybe it's your own darn fault, you loser. For Pete's sake, you know, what is the sense of, you know, look, Gary Johnson, you got into a debate and nobody noticed, okay? I mean, basically the vast majority of viewers out there looked at him and said, who's this guy? Listen to what he had to say. And then kind of, you didn't hear any clamoring for more Gary Johnson after that, okay? He's been included in polls. He's been not included into polls. If he's lucky, on really fantastic days, he broke 2%. You can't argue that the media hasn't given him a chance or that somehow there's this vast conspiracy to keep his message from coming out. Look, this is a cycle in which frontrunners have included or nearly included Donald Trump, Michelle Bachmann, Herman Cain, Rick Perry, and now Newt Gingrich. You can't tell me that the media is not open to unconventional candidates, okay? A political environment that allows Herman Cain to thrive but doesn't allow Gary Johnson. I mean, come on. You know, stop whining. Stop blaming other people. Gary Johnson is a weak candidate. I find the polling from public policy polling a little bit ominous, this idea that he would take 9% nationally, but it still argues that he would do way better in a generic election amongst voters who have not paid any attention to him whatsoever than he is amongst Republican voters. And I have a hard time believing that will be the case. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if he remembers to file the papers for New Mexico or any of these other states. But this is a candidate who lacked seriousness in a bunch of different areas in the basic blocking and tackling and logistics of politics. Whining and complaining and refusing to accept the fact that people don't like him as much as they like other candidates. Gary Johnson, grow up, go home, and find something else to do with your life.
Yeah, it's shocking that people didn't clamor for more of him in the debates after. Basically, he was known for two things in that debate. Number one, he made a dog poop joke about shovel-ready jobs. And secondly, I think the most reaction he got from the viewership was, holy cow, somebody's podium is further away from the middle than Huntsman. So that's pretty much his legacy in this campaign, and hopefully it'll stay that way. So, Jim, just a wonderful, wonderful day in the three martini lunch. Let's hope we get something better.
I tried to fire it up in the last one. Some days you're just not going to have good martinis. You're going to have extra crazy martinis and just, you know, revel in those. So here's hoping for tomorrow.
That's right. You're a pro. You brought it strong. You brought it strong all day long, even though we did not have a lot of good stuff to talk about. But there was some crazy stuff and some bad stuff. Actually, a lot of bad stuff. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Go big or go home. See you, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again Thursday for the Three Martini Lunch.